Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hello and welcome to Lost in Science. Oh, how is it this time of year again? January 2026. Can you believe it? I certainly can't. But as they say, new year, new you. Same excellent science show, and that's what we are here for. My name is Claire, and with me I have the whole crew. Hello, Stu.
Hi, Claire.
Lyndon. Hello, Lyndon.
Hello, Claire. Happy 2026 to you.
Oh, happy 2026 to you too. And Chris, how does 2026 feel to you?
It's so different to 2025. I can't believe it. It's just like everything has changed.
Feels like a whole different universe, doesn't it?
Haven't seen you guys since last year.
Oh, wow. Oh, let's make that joke a few more times, yeah.
But, you know, I feel like we haven't quite sent 2025 off sailing into the distance.
Please.
With the proper...
Sorry, yes, carry on. No.
With the appropriate Viking funeral.
Yeah, exactly.
With the appropriate Viking funeral.
We haven't shot quite enough flaming arrows at 2025.
Yeah. Just yet. And so that's why we're all here, to proverbially shoot those arrows at 2025. So how are we going to do it, team? What have we got?
Well, I did want to say I didn't get time last year to pay a bit of tribute to all of – and there was a great number of science names who passed away in 2025 in the – spirit of recognition of their work. I can't possibly list everyone. So I did pull out some Nobel Prize winners who passed away in 2025. And I just wanted to quickly mention them, quickly talk about what they brought us and why they won the Nobel Prize. Whole bunch of medicine and physiology prize winners passed last year. And also a number of physicists. And there was also a couple of honourable mentions I wanted to throw in if I've got some time at the end. The French having a very strong showing in that regard.
Well, a good time to do that. Okay, so we've got some fond farewells to some of our best and brightest, but also I feel like there was a lot of science that happened and there's probably things that people missed. How are we going to get through all of that science one show?
Look, the best I can do is provide a little bit of retrospective in the only way that I know how, which is through putting you all on the spot and making you...
Quiz form?
It's a quiz!
Exposing your lack of memory of what actually happened.
Wow. I mean, the older I get, the... worse that my ability is to answer things on the spot. So
well
thank
said,
you so
well
much,
said,
Chris.
Claire.
Yeah, exactly. Excellent. Okay, so that's something we can all take part in. Everyone listening can take part in it. So there's some fond farewells, and also I don't know, maybe some of our listeners will be farewelling some of their brain cells as well, or welcoming some new ones. Excellent. All right. 2025, get behind us. It's all about 2026 from here on in. So on with the show.
All right. So as I said in the intro, there was a large number of famous scientists who passed away last year, and one of the big ones was, and quite late in the year, was Jane Goodall, who was famous for her work in primatology, spent a lot of time studying chimpanzees and championing conservation. And, you know, one of the amazing things about her work particularly was, you know, conservation wasn't a really huge movement when she started out. And I think the work that she did with the chimps had a much broader impact on people thinking about the natural world and how many species we potentially could lose if we didn't start looking after those natural areas that we still had left, which I think had a huge impact on saving not only the chimps but other species as well. And it's always good to have a champion species that people can get behind, and that was a good one to pick. Not that that was why she did it, but she was interested in chimps. But yeah, so Jane Goodall passed away. But I tried to figure out who to focus on. I thought maybe an easy way to look at it was people who had won the Nobel Prize. Not everyone is a huge fan of Nobel Prize winners. It's a very strange selection process, and you get people winning prizes for work that they did potentially years earlier in their career than when they get the prize, and then you get people who win the prize very quickly after they've made a new discovery or something like that. So some of these are quite old Nobel Prize winners, but all of these people passed away in 2025. I'm going to start with some from the medicine and or physiology Nobel Prize. So the first one that I came across was David Baltimore, who passed away on September the 6th, 2025. Now, he was awarded the 1975 Nobel Prize, or part, you know, jointly awarded the 1975 Nobel Prize for Medicine, for his work on interaction between tumor viruses and cellular DNA, which doesn't really sound very interesting. But what he actually discovered in that research was an enzyme called reverse transcriptase. Now, reverse transcriptase is an enzyme that converts RNA into DNA. And this enzyme is used by viruses like hepatitis B and HIV to replicate their genetic material. Now, he didn't know that at the time, but using the work that he did with reverse transcriptase and figuring out what it did, they've actually used that enzyme to build a class of drugs that have been developed and used to fight those viruses in medical treatments. So this is the interesting thing to me about Nobel Prizes, is you don't necessarily know what's going to come of that research, although a lot of scientists obviously go, wow, that's really important that they figured that out. But we don't necessarily see the outcomes of that research for a really long time. Other times you can kind of tell straight away. So another scientist who passed away last year was Sir John Gurdon, who was awarded the 2012 Nobel Prize for Medicine and Physiology for the discovery that mature cells can be altered to become pluripotent. Now, I actually remember this work being published and publicized. Basically, what he found was that you could take ordinary mature cells and turn them back into undifferentiated cells. So
wow, yeah.
You could chemically manipulate the cell and it could then be turned into any cell type that you wanted. And this is how a lot of that, you know, you often see, they've grown kidney cells in a petri dish, or they've grown a kidney-like organ and that sort of thing. They're trying to grow organs. This all comes from this guy's work. So it's actually relatively recent work. But
he would have done that in the later stage of his career, if he won in
2012, but he was working since, you know, the 1950s. In the 1950s, he cloned a frog by transferring an intact nucleus from a tadpole cell into a frog egg, and it grew into a frog.
Wow!
So he'd been working in that field for a really long time before being recognized. But the work that he did that got recognized was much later in his career, I guess. Another scientist who passed away in 2025, Hamilton Smith, won the Nobel Prize in 1978 for discovering restriction enzymes. Now, you might go, big deal. What's a restriction enzyme? So restriction enzymes are proteins that work as a defense system in bacteria, which help them chop up foreign DNA. So if a virus infects a bacterial cell, these restriction enzymes identify it, chop it up into little pieces so it can't replicate within the cell. So that was discovered in 1978. He went very heavily into genomics, which was pretty new stuff at the time in the 70s. But he actually went on to sequence the first bacterial genome in the 1980s. And then he went on to work on the Human Genome Project as well because of his experience. So, you know, that's, like I said, some of these researchers got their Nobel Prize really early and went on to do possibly even bigger things, and then other ones sort of get it much later, even though they've been working for a really long time. So medicine and physiology, and I'll come back to medicine and physiology later if I have a bit of time. Now we're going into the world of physics. So Chris will know all about all of these physicists and all of their work. I'm sure he's read every paper that they've published. No, Chris? You look doubtful.
I'm not going to make any promises, but let's see.
Now, the first one I've got to say, we've probably all come into contact with his work. So this is a weird one too. George E. Smith passed away in May last year. He won the Nobel Prize in 2009 for something he invented in 1969. So something which was briefly very popular and important, now basically only used in scientific instruments, but the first mobile phone cameras were based on his coupled charge device, or CCD. So this is a light detecting component, which is the basis of a lot of digital cameras in the early days. Now, yes, I said it.
Yeah, I obviously heard of those, but you know,
they're not used
so much anymore. Yeah,
no, they're not used so much anymore, and the reason is not because they're not very good at what they do. They're actually used for very precise scientific measurement and imaging, but they've been replaced in mobile phones by cheaper, lower powered CMOS cameras, which basically they use a fraction of the energy and they do what they need to do, which is take selfies, basically. You're not doing scientific measurements with the average mobile phone. But he invented that in 1969, got the Nobel Prize for it in 2009. So there's something of a gap between the discovery and the recognition. It does make me wonder if they sort of went, oh, where did these phone cameras come from? Oh, this guy invented them way back when. Oh, he deserves a Nobel Prize. I don't know how it works, but it seems like a long time to wait for the recognition. Now, another one, I think we've covered this on the show even. That's how recently this prize was. But Rainer Weiss passed away in 2025. He was awarded the Nobel Prize in 2017 for contributions to the LIGO detector. And I'm sure you've heard of that one, Chris. I'm pretty sure you did a story on it.
Observatory, yeah.
Yeah, so this is a huge observatory which measures tiny, tiny perturbations in space, basically. I think I read something about it's the what was the thing? It was the charge distance of a proton or something was the measurement that it can detect down to. But
so yeah, just big long arms at perpendicular to each other, and you measure if one of them changes length, essentially due to space-time rippling as a wave comes through it. Yeah.
Mm. But yeah, I mean, obviously that was big news for physics in 2017, and I think they've built more observatories since then. There's another one in Japan now, and there's another one somewhere else, but I can't remember where they said that was. But yeah, so he got his Nobel Prize in 2017, passed away last year. But really, fundamental physics, really, that there are gravitational waves. I mean, that's pretty amazing stuff. Now, this last one, I'm not sure if you remember this work, Chris. It's probably a bit before your time. This is from the 50s. So Yang Chen Ning passed away in October 2025. Now, he jointly won a Nobel Prize for his work on the Wu experiment, which is in 1956. But he didn't win the Nobel Prize until 1958. Now, the Wu experiment showed that the weak interaction was different to the strong nuclear force and electromagnetic forces. It was apparently a huge deal for the physics community, who had assumed that they all behaved in exactly the same way.
Yeah, it showed, I think, parity violation or something like that, that it was right and left-handed. Yeah, it was Chen Sheng Wu was the person he was named after, was the experimentalist, Chinese-born, Chinese-American physicist. And, yeah, she was one of the most, I guess, well-known women in particle physics.
And unfortunately didn't get recognized by the Nobel Committee for her work, even though the experiment was named after her and she designed it and set it up, but she didn't get the Nobel Prize for it, which I thought was a bit of an oversight. But
was it the theorists that they gave it to or the experimentalists?
They gave it to the two theorists who explained the finding, I think, is how it worked. But she obviously knew what it meant, or she wouldn't have designed the experiment.
Her name is now a lot more famous than theirs. And
is she still alive?
No, she passed away in 1995, but they got the Nobel Prize in the 50s, so she was definitely eligible. Now, as I said, I did have a couple of non-Nobel winners who I thought deserved honourable mentions who passed away last year. The first one is Xavier Le Pichon, whose name you may not recognise, but if you know the term plate tectonics, he's the reason that you know that term. So Xavier Le Pichon basically combined a whole lot of theory together. He was a physicist by training, working on oceanography, basically looked at the results of a whole lot of different fields of study, put them all together, and showed clearly in 1968 that the concept of plate tectonics could accurately explain the formation of the world's oceans. And before that, they didn't think that's how it worked. So to me, that is far more recent than it should be, that we worked out that the continents are floating around on plates. But, you know, science, it's a win for science. So he passed away late last year as well. And the other one who I think deserves an honourable mention, partly because his work thrust him into a political hotbed, a political turmoil he didn't want to be involved in, a French endocrinologist called Étienne-Émile Baillieu, who studied human hormones extensively and came up with the idea of an anti-progesterone chemical, which became the drug mifepristone, or better known as RU486, which was synthesized in 1980. And because his name was attached to it, he got dragged into the political abortion debate globally, pretty much about, you know. And really, he was just trying to make a much more safe, non-surgical solution to a problem, which he saw as a huge threat to women's health, basically. So, yes, that's a number of people who passed away. As I said, I couldn't get to everyone, but I thought the ones who won Nobel Prizes should at least mention them, mention some of the minor controversies about some of them. And, you know, I think plate tectonics and RU486 are worth remembering the people who came up with those or demonstrated the efficacy of the drug and the reality of plate tectonics as well. As I said, many, many more, and RIP to all of those scientists.
I think we're lost.
We're not lost.
Not even any short-range radio signals yet?
Except for a single, very powerful radio emission.
Of course, a transmitter of that sort isn't exactly standard equipment.
The science and technology must be absolutely mind-boggling.
Of course, that's mostly on the theoretical side.
What so far?
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, you're listening to Lost in Science.
Okay, yes, this is hopefully the last you'll hear of 2025 from us. but yeah, I thought I'd give a bit of a wrap-up of most of the stories that we've covered on the show. I want to test our presenter's knowledge. Have you been?
You've gone back and listened to all the old episodes.
Yeah, essentially, I've been paying attention to what I'm trying to say. Now, clearly, I'm going to have a bit of a bias to my own stories, but it's also because I don't want to make it too easy for anyone in particular. But there'll be some other ones scattered in here. But look, let us dive in and see. Well, and I don't think there's going to be any prizes or points awarded, but maybe if someone is a particularly good performance, we'll think of something. Perhaps one of those cookies that Claire was talking about last week. I don't know.
Made to order.
All right, so jumping right in. Of course, 2025 was the International Year of Quantum Science and Technology. Whose work on the island of Helgoland 100 years ago, sorry, 101 years ago, was commemorated by the Quantum Year? Famous physicist Claire.
It's Mr. Uncertainty.
Yes. I do need a name, though.
Werner Heisenberg.
That's right.
His name was Heisenberg. That's right. It definitely didn't just escape my mind. I definitely knew that.
No, you were certain. You were
absolutely
certain.
And I definitely have learned a lot and have not forgotten everything about quantum now that it's 2026.
All right. I am not testing you on that, though, Claire. But you're quite right. Yes, it is Werner Heisenberg, who, of course, went to the island of Helgoland, a bit of a kind of a coastal resort, because he was suffering from really bad hay fever, something that some of us can relate to. All right. Okay, here we go. Here's one. There was an animal that was claimed to have been de-extincted. Is that a word? I don't know. In 2025, what animal was that?
Buzz, Lyndon, Buzz.
Yes, Lyndon.
It was the dire wolf.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It wasn't the woolly colossal, mammoth, was it?
Colossal company, no. Colossal.
Biosciences, yes.
Biosciences. They're all over the place, but they're US team took the genes of a grey wolf, altered about 20 things, and some dire wolf pups and white wolf pups were born, causing great controversy and discussion about what is bringing something back from extinction. Are they really dire wolves? Are they not?
No.
No.
I think most people agree they're not really dire wolves.
Yeah. They're mutant wolves.
Yeah.
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 Okay, excellent, excellent point there to Claire and Lyndon. All right, here's a question that came from our International Women's Day episode. So CSIRO chemist Isabel Joy Bear, one of the things she's known for was describing the chemical that is behind the smell of rain. What is that chemical called?
Ooh.
Stew. Oh.
Petrichor.
That is correct. Yeah, like I said, CSIRO chemist did a lot of important work, but that is, yes, this kind of like smelly thing is what I guess she is best known for. Okay, let's moving along. Speaking of, I guess, well, it's not really chemicals and things, there was a new colour discovered in 2025. What sort of colour was it? Does anyone remember?
Buzz.
Yes, Lyndon.
Sorry, Stu, I think you spoke about this. It's blue. It was a shade of blue. No? Green.
I don't accept green. That answer because it was a blue-green.
Yes.
Oh, blue-green.
It was kind of a – it was called Olo. Stu, do you want to tell us about Olo?
It's a very interesting experiment. They have a fine enough device to trigger individual light receptors in the eyeball, and they did this to people basically shooting lasers into their eyeball to see if they could see any color. And that's the color is they could see is Olo. And it was by triggering only the green receptor in the light receptors, I think. And that's the color they could see. They could only see it when the receptors are stimulated by this particular beam of light they were shooting into their eyes.
Yeah. And the closest thing the name to came it from was a sort of a like, teal color.
Yeah.
And the name came from 010, I think, wasn't it?
That
it was one thing that was stimulated?
Yeah. Yeah, because it was a single cone. Cone, I think. Anyway.
Yes.
Rods.
I don't know. We'll go to the fact checkers on the anyway. all right, moving along. Okay, the Prime Minister's Prize for Science is one of the big prizes. Professor Lydia Morawska won that this year. Didn't remember what is one of her most notable discoveries. Or achievements.
Buzz.
Yes, Lyndon.
She was in charge of the researchers during the pandemic who discovered or realized that COVID was airborne.
That is correct.
That it wasn't just being 1.5 meters apart from each other wasn't quite enough because the virus could exist in the air. She's a real advocate for air quality internally, like inside and outside. And she really led the charge internationally and got a lot of World Health Organizations and rules changed during the pandemic. Very worthy winner of the Prime Minister's Prize this year.
And have we all got much better air quality now? I don't think we've got a fair way to go actually on that. But yes, you're quite right. That is what she was known for. Okay. I think Lyndon is still leading here. Let's see if I can throw things.
I've been training hard.
Okay. So carcinization is the process of convergent evolution where things turn into crabs. The crabs one.
I remember this one.
So a word that I'm not sure is in the actual scientific paper, word I use in the story was myrmecophagization. What is myrmecophagization? Oh, Lyndon, don't you be. Lyndon, come on.
I know it. I remember. I listened to you, Chris.
What is it?
Slugs. It's slugs.
No.
Oh, isn't it slugs?
No,
it's not.
It's not. No, I call that one slugification. But
something to do with mermaids?
The slugification was my own speculation based on my research into how slugs have evolved.
I have retained that as scientific fact and spread it far and wide.
It's got phage in it. So what's that to do with?
Consumption, eating. Like eating.
Yeah.
Anteating.
That's right.
Yes. Anteating. Yes. Oh, of course. There was a paper. Pangolins and echidnas.
Yeah, there's a paper published showing anteaters. That anteaters had evolved since the last 66 million years, since dinosaurs were wiped out and mammals essentially took over. Anteaters have evolved 12 separate times. And so it is in a similar kind of body shape that you need to have to, you know, eat ants. And it is a common form of convergent evolution. Okay, so I think we're going to do one last question. Oh, I don't want to make it I've got a stew question here, but I don't think you can answer. Okay, here's a question. How many planets is our solar system currently known to have?
Got to make the buzz noise, Stu. Can't just put your hand up. It's radio.
Okay. Yes, Stu.
8.
That is correct. Yes. Planet 9. There was some speculation this year that Planet 9 had been discovered by a little dot on a photographic plate, but it still as yet remains unconfirmed, but highly hypothesized, I suppose.
Was it just someone's coffee spilled on the photographic plate?
It was something that someone had seen as a little distant object moving, but it's yet to be shown whether it is actually a planet, like big enough to be a planet that is what Planet 9 is believed to be. Okay, so I think, counting that up, I think that Lyndon had about 4 questions then.
Oh, Lyndon.
And Claire, I think you had 1, Stu had about 2, I think, was it? I wasn't keeping score.
2.5.
A worthy winner, so Lyndon. Is the winner. We bow down in 2025.
Does that mean I get to jump on the Viking ship, or do I get to shoot the last arrow?
I think you get to shoot the last arrow.
Yeah. You've really put an arrow in 2025.
That's right. We can stop talking about it now and move on to the exciting discoveries that lay ahead in 2026. And that's it for another episode of Lost in Science. Lost in Science is recorded for 3CR in Melbourne on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and it airs across Australia on the Community Radio Network with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. We would love you to get in touch with us. You can email us at lostinsci@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook, we're Lost in Science on 3CR, or on Twitter, where we're at lostinscience1. You can find us on your favourite podcast app, where if you get the chance, please give us a good rating and review, as that will raise us up in the search rankings so other people can find the science. Or you can listen to us however you listen to us now, where the same time every week, Claire, Stu and Chris get
Lost in Science.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.